Appreciate the manner in which we've been led in our worship services this morning and which we've all engaged in our worship unto God. So very thankful for that. Want to encourage you to have your Bible out and open to 1 Timothy chapter 3. We're really going to look at two passages this morning. 1 Timothy chapter 3 verses 1 through 7 and Titus chapter 1 verses 6 through 9 as we take another look at the qualifications of elders. 3 weeks ago, we considered some of the more controversial qualifications. What does it mean that a man must be apt to teach, that he is the husband of one wife, having faithful children and one who rules his own house well? And we dug into those qualifications and looked at them in detail. What I want to do this morning is take a completely opposite approach. We're going to get in the fast lane today, and we're going to look at the rest of the qualifications. Many of them do not need near as much discussion or explanation or study as the ones we looked at a few weeks ago, but all of them are important. Many of the qualifications we're going to look at in our study today have to do with an elder's character, which is very important as we are considering appointing 3 additional elders here at Knollwood. I want us to get into this study. I've got, if you're a note taker, 14 points today. So I don't say that often when I'm preaching, but like I said, we're going to get over into the fast lane in our study today, and I'm going to do the best impersonation of an auctioneer that I can as we are studying today. Let's start at the very beginning. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 1, an elder must be a man. This is a faithful saying, if a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. The fact that, as we studied previously, an elder must be the husband of one wife, that means that an elder cannot be a woman. An elder has to be a man. And I know that our society today would have some things to say about that. And there are even some very liberal churches of Christ who in recent years have unashamedly appointed women to serve as elders in their congregations. The Bible makes it clear that an elder has to be a man. And this is consistent with what the Bible says about leadership among God's people and even in the Lord's church in the New Testament. Looking at the same passage, we see that it can't be just any man, but it has to be a man who desires the work of an elder. The word desire is translated from the Greek, a Greek word that means to reach or to stretch out. The idea is this is something that he wants, something that he is desiring, striving to obtain, signifying the mental effort of stretching oneself out for a thing. This tells us that an elder can't be a man who has been coerced or pressured into serving. It is one who desires to serve because he wants to serve. The motivation has to come from within, not from without. So it has to be a man, it has to be one who desires the work. Now, these are some very specific qualifications. The rest of the qualifications we're looking at today can apply and should apply to all of us as Christians. But as we're studying, let's be focusing upon those who will serve as elders. Third, an elder must be blameless. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and at verse 2, a bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, good behavior, hospitable, able to teach. This qualification is also found in Titus. Titus chapter 1 verses 6 and 7. It's repeated in Titus. So he must be blameless. Now there are some who believe that this qualification of blameless is actually a modifier of all the rest of the qualifications, that he is the husband of one wife and does so blamelessly. He is temperate and sober-minded and does so blamelessly. But I want to look at it as a separate qualification, one that describes the individual himself. The New American Standard Version says that he is above reproach. Blameless cannot mean sinless perfection. How do we know that? We wouldn't have any elders if that's what this qualification meant. And if you go nitpicking and you go looking, you can find fault with everyone. Some of the greatest leaders of God's people in the Old Testament, their faults are right out there for us to see. So blameless doesn't mean sinless perfection. It is translated from a very interesting Greek word. The Greek word means that cannot be laid hold of. And the idea is he doesn't have a glaring fault sticking out of his character so large that you can easily get a hold of it. Some people have that. Some people have those character flaws. An elder cannot be such an individual. It signifies that which cannot be called into account with nothing laid to one's charge as the result of public investigation. Here's a person that it's not easy to find fault with him. It's not that they're perfect, but that there's really nothing to get a hold of. The man's character and behavior is such that charges against him are quickly dispelled. So we're looking for an individual. We're looking for men with this character, this quality. We're not looking for sinless perfection, but we're looking for someone that has no glaring, obvious fault in their life. Next, I've got some qualifications I want to put together because they are very similar. This is found in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and at verse 2, also in Titus chapter 1 and verse 8. And these words are very related in their meaning, being temperate, being sober-minded, being self-control. Temperate would be one who is watchful, one who has a state of mind which is free from excessive influence of passion, lust, or emotion. That doesn't mean that an elder has to be someone who's like a board and doesn't react to anything that happens, no. But an elder has to be someone that is not given into excessive influence of passion. One who is sober-minded, sensible, the New American Standard Version says. This is one who is self-disciplined or self-restrained and shows mental and emotional balance. And of course, self-controlled, very easy to understand, one who has power over themselves. These words describe a man with a balanced mind, someone who is reasonable in his attitude and thinking and his behavior, someone who's not given to extremes, but someone that you can count on to be consistent in their life and in their reaction. Someone who holds their emotions in check. Someone who is alert and focused and not easily fooled by others. All of these ideas are involved with these particular qualifications. Fifth, someone who is of good behavior. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2. Good behavior. This word, good behavior, it comes from a Greek word, kosmos, from which we get our English word, cosmos, which has to do with the order of the universe. As you look out into outer space, there is order to the universe. Well, there needs to be order to this man's life. It's talking about one whose life is well organized. And that doesn't mean that they've got everything in order the way you think they ought to have everything in order. But it means here's someone who is well-balanced, someone who holds his life together, someone who is of good behavior. And this qualification makes him a great example to those who are under his charge. In 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 3, here's another passage that's addressed to elders. 1 Peter 5 and at verse 3 says of elders, nor being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. Elders are to be examples. They are to be men of good behavior. They are to be given to hospitality. This is found in 1 Timothy 3 verse 2, also Titus chapter 1 and verse 8. Now as we look at this word in the Lord's church today, and really I believe in our society, our culture today, when we think about giving to hospitality, we question, well, does he ever have anyone in his home? And somehow that's the extent of this qualification. I've never been over to his house. I don't know if he's hospitable or not. And for some reason, we want to connect that word hospitality to someone opening their home and having people into their home. That is important. That is important. But the word literally means a love of strangers. And so, given to hospitality, or one who is hospitable, is one who above all cares about people and is willing to tend to the needs of people. That's the idea behind hospitality. Not limited to having a guest in your home for a meal, but someone who's willing to do what he can and at times what he must in order to meet the needs of others. And hospitality is one area in which an elder is going to be helped greatly by his wife and the cooperation of his children, if his children are still living in his home. Given to hospitality. Let's not ask, well, I've never been invited over to their house. We can mark them off. But let's ask, do they care about people? And do they help people? That's the question that needs to be coming to our mind with given to hospitality. Not given to wine. This is found in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 3, but also in Titus chapter 1 and verse 7. The New American Standard Version says not addicted to wine. The Greek means one who tarries at the wine, or one who stays at the wine. One who spends his time drinking alcohol is not qualified to serve as an elder. It's made very, very easy, very simple here. Well, the question would come, then, what about an occasional drink? Or what about what we call social drinking? Well, if we need to explore that, we can. That's going to take about an entire sermon in and of itself. And we've preached sermons along that line here before, and I know we'll do so again. If we need to do that now as we're going through this process, let me know and we will. But I would make this one observation. We've already pointed out the fact that an elder has to be one who is sober-minded. We know, studies show, that alcohol impacts an individual's sobriety with the first drink. So that would do away with what we would call moderate or social drinking. If an elder is to be sober-minded, an elder doesn't need to be under the influence of anything. Of anything as they are doing their task of overseeing the church. And that task is a 24/7 task. So, someone who is given to wine, someone that gives themselves to alcohol or other mind-altering drugs, is not qualified to serve as an elder. Number 8, not violent, not quarrelsome, not quick-tempered. These are separate qualifications, but here again, I want to group them together because they are very similar. 1 Timothy 3, verse 3 reads, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. The word violent, King James Version says striker. The New American Standard Version says pugnacious, which I thought newer translations were supposed to use words to help you better understand the text. We don't use that word pugnacious very often, but I suspect it means not violent. The idea here is someone who is a violent person both in action as well as with their words. Someone who is ready to fight. Someone who takes offense easily. Such a man is not qualified to serve as an elder. His personality will not make for peace, but will certainly make for strife within the eldership, but also within the congregation. Remember that shepherds, and that's what elders are, elders are shepherds. They lead the flock. They don't drive the flock with a whip. They lead the flock, and so they must do so in a gentle way. The word gentle is found here in verse 3 of 1 Timothy chapter 3. King James Version says patient. With gentle, we have here the ability to look humanely and reasonably at the facts of the case, to consider the greater needs of an individual or a situation. We need to remember that elders do not meet, they are not administrators who meet behind closed doors, and that's where their responsibility is taken. Is done. They are shepherds. They deal with people. They have to interact with people, and people have to be dealt with sometimes in a gentle and patient manner. Yes, there are times when an elder has to pull out the sword of the Spirit and fight. Titus chapter 1, verses 10 and 11 makes that very clear. But there are also times when an elder has to administer the balm of Gilead to a wounded lamb in the congregation. And that takes a gentle touch. An elder has to be one who strives to understand the weaknesses and the ignorance of brethren, and to be patient and to be gentle while exhorting and correcting them. Another qualification here, not quarrelsome. King James Version says, not a brawler. That is someone who is not disposed to fight. Someone who is without battle or controversy. Doesn't mean they're not willing to fight, but someone that is not their first inclination. Let me put it this way. As we go through our daily lives, there are things that we have to react to. And sometimes we have to react to something in a very serious way. And we get our emotions involved. We get our energy involved. And that's how we have to handle that situation. But then when it's all done, that emergency is over, and we reset ourselves to our natural mode of operation. The natural reset for an elder has to be a man who is gentle, not a man who's ready to fight and looking for a fight and looking to quarrel. But we're looking for someone whose natural reset is someone who is gentle, someone who is kind, someone who is loving. Not quick-tempered. This is found in Titus chapter 1 and verse 7. It's unique to the book of Titus. Not soon angry, the King James Version says. This is one who is not prone to anger, not irritable, not grouchy. This, of course, has to do with an elder's emotional temperament. A lot has been said during this process of appointing additional elders and deacons about the fact that these men, not just elders, but deacons as well, have to be approachable. Have you heard us use that word, that concept? These are men that have to be approachable. Well, a person who is violent and quarrelsome and quick-tempered is not approachable. If you go to such an individual with a problem and they blow up at you, are you going to take a problem to them again? No, you're not. Those who will lead, those who will shepherd God's flock, have to be men who are patient. That doesn't mean they're not allowed to be angry. Let's be careful there. The Lord Himself was angry. We read of God's anger. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26 says, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Elders are allowed to be angry, but they have to manage that anger and resolve that anger in a Christ-like way. Do we know these men well enough to know that they are not violent, they're not quarrelsome, they're not quick-tempered, but instead, they are gentle men? Next, an elder cannot be covetous, cannot be greedy for money, cannot be covetous. This is in verse 3, but also in Titus chapter 1 and at verse 7. This covetous or greedy for money describes a person who doesn't care how money is made just so long as there is a profit. The Bible has a lot to say about money and about wealth and about our attitude towards such things. Now, this isn't teaching that an elder cannot be a wealthy man. But an elder is going to be involved in the way that the church spends its funds. And an elder is going to have unique access to those funds. It cannot be a man who's covetous. Cannot be a man who is greedy for money. Cannot be someone who has the mindset, the Lord is going to be pleased with us if we can have the largest savings account of any local church in the United States. That's what our goal is. That's what our plan is. No, the money that is contributed to the church is to be used. And elders need to understand that. And they cannot be in it for gain, for filthy lucre's sake, as some translations say. It is a wise thing that although elders are in the position where they are making decisions of how the Lord's money is spent, it's good for them to have some people and things put in place to separate them from those funds. That's just a wise thing to do. That's just a smart thing to do. The elders, as we're looking at men who will serve as elders, what is their attitude towards money? Are they covetous? Are they greedy? Do they have an evil attitude towards money? Number 10 is an interesting qualification found in Timothy alone. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and at verse 6, not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. A novice is a beginner. That's what a novice is. This can't be someone who is beginning their walk with Christ. This can't be someone who is a new convert. Now, maybe he's been a successful father, has raised a good family, and has recently come into the church. Well, that's great. That's great. Maybe he's a very successful businessman. Maybe a successful community leader. That's great. But if they are a new babe in Christ, they are not qualified to serve as an elder. The word novice here, the Greek word literally means newly planted. Summertime is starting for us, and I don't know if you've heard about the forecast, but boy, it's coming next week, which I guess is this week now. But springtime is all but gone for us. But in the springtime, a lot of us plant flowers and we plant gardens. And when the seeds sprout, and you've got that little plant there that's growing up, just popped up out of the ground, just popped up out of the little planter that you've put it in. You don't appoint someone like that to serve as an elder. They've got a ways to go. They've got a ways to go as they grow and as they learn. Elders are to be spiritually mature men who have studied the scriptures well enough to be able to teach and defend the truth. A novice can't do that. And so a new Christian is not qualified. There's a good principle that's set forth in the qualification for deacons in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and at verse 10. But let these also first be tested, then let them serve as deacons, being found blameless. I believe the same thing would hold true for an elder. Let the man be tested first. What kind of a man is he spiritually? We want to see that in action. We want to have a track record there that we can look at regarding this man before we appoint him to serve. Number 11 is not self-willed. Now we're going to turn to Titus. We're going to look at the qualifications that are unique to the book of Titus. Titus chapter 1 and verse 7 says that the bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed. Quite simply put, this is the man that has the my way or the highway attitude. And that's not going to work. That might work for an entrepreneur who is trying to get himself involved in a successful business in some way, someone who's a self-promoter, but it's not going to work in the eldership. This, matter of fact, this qualification is the very opposite of gentle. This is a person who's going to be inconsiderate and intolerant of the wants and the needs and feelings and desires of others. Why is this qualification important? Think about it. An elder is going to be a part of an eldership. And an eldership is going to have to work together. And if you've got one elder in there who is insisting on their way being done, that's going to spell problems for the eldership, and it's going to spell problems for the church. And you know what? Satan is going to be able to use that person to wreak havoc on the church. And we are not to give Satan any advantage over us whatsoever. And so someone who is self-willed is not qualified and should never be appointed to serve as an elder. A lover of what is good. Titus 1 and at verse 8. The King James Version maybe helps us out here when it translates this phrase as a lover of good men. If focusing not just on good in general, but a lover of good people, of good men. Elders are to be men who encourage and support and promote that which is good. Not just promoting the gospel, not just promoting the word of God, but when you step beyond that, an elder needs to be one who promotes, who loves, who celebrates, who encourages that which is good. And let's remember that good is determined by God, not by us, certainly not by the world out there, but a lover of good as it is determined by God. An elder must also be just and holy. Now, these are separate qualifications, but I want to put them together here on this point. An elder must be judiciously fair, exact, impartial, and honest in all his dealings with others, especially as serving as an elder. There's a phrase that we use, and unfortunately, there's a lot of truth to it, and that phrase is, blood is thicker than water. And sometimes when it comes to deciding differences, family relations and close friendships can have a lot of sway in a person's thought. That won't do for an elder. Obviously, an elder is going to have family in the congregation. You would hope it. His wife is a member. So an elder is going to have family, and it's okay for an elder to have friends in the congregation. I think the elder should be friendly with everyone, but as a preacher, let me pause just a moment. Let me address this. As a preacher, I tell younger men, younger preachers, it's okay for you to have close friends in the congregation. That's okay. Because we all love each other. But the fact is, we have preferences, and we have close friendships with one another. And that's going to be true of elders. That's going to be true of elders' wives, and deacons' wives. It's true of your preacher and his wife. But when it comes to an elder deciding what is right and what is best for the congregation, an elder needs to be able to rise above that and choose what is right, and choose what is just. So are we selecting men who have that ability? They've got friends, they've got family, but they're able to rise above that, and we can count on them to do what is right, instead of walking away disappointed and say, well, blood is thicker than water. We need to think about that. And there is the qualification of holy. That is to be undefiled by sin, free from wickedness, religiously observing every moral obligation, pure, pious. Be very close to blameless, to the qualification of blameless. But it's different from blameless in that it has an added component to it. Holiness or sanctification has the idea not just of being cleansed and free from defilement, but also set aside in service unto God. An elder has to be a devoted servant of God. Someone who is living their life in such a way that they are keeping themselves pure, they are keeping themselves free from those things that would take away from their credibility and their influence in serving as elders in a local congregation. An elder has to be a man who desires to live a life that is free from sin and defilement. And there's one last thing that I want us to look at. And no, I never dreamed I could cover 14 points so quickly, but we did it. You're witnesses. This last point, it's very interesting, but very important. It goes back to Timothy. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 7. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. This qualification reaches outside of the local church, and it considers, what do people outside the church who know this man, what would they think about him serving as an elder? What kind of a reputation does he have outside the church? This qualification is a check against hypocrisy, the sin of hypocrisy in the church. Let me put it this way. Let me explain it this way. Let's say that there's a man in the congregation that's being considered to serve as an elder. And you go to this man's neighbor, or you go to this man's co-workers, or you go to this man's friend in the world and say, we're considering appointing him to serve as one of our spiritual leaders. And their response is, really? Him? Don't you know what he's done? That won't do. That won't do. Or perhaps a response like this, he goes to church? That won't do. That kind of a response won't do. That is something that will harm the church. That's something that would bring reproach upon the church. Look, here's the reason, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. An elder who is playing the role of a hypocrite will eventually be found out. And when it's found out, it's going to spell trouble for the entire church. And so we need to consider, what is their reputation among those in the world who know them? Would they be surprised? Would they be disappointed to learn that the individual is being considered to be appointed as one of our spiritual leaders? And that's something that we need to think about. So we've gone through these very quickly. Many of them are very easy to understand. If we need to go back and cover them, or you've got some questions, let me know. We can study together. I can point you in a direction. But I wanted to cover these. I've gotten a request. Let's talk about the qualifications for elders. And so we've done that. So one thing we need to be doing, the three names that have been set before us, we need to be thinking about these qualifications. Do they meet these qualifications? Let's go a little bit further with that. What about the men who are currently serving as elders? Are they still meeting these qualifications? We need to be thinking about that. But let's go even further still. You take away the first two we looked at today. Am I striving to have these qualifications in my life? Really, the qualifications for an elder, apart from the physical qualifications and the desire to serve, are really the qualifications of a good Christian. We need to be striving to have these qualifications. There's a lot that's going on with the church at Knollwood here. We got VBS starting tomorrow night. That's very exciting. We are in the process of appointing elders, additional elders and deacons here. A lot going on. And let's give it our due attention, including the appointment of additional elders in the congregation. Thank you so much for riding with me in the fast lane today. And I appreciate your attention as we've gone through. I realize a sermon like this is not designed to elicit a response to the gospel invitation. But the whole reason for the church to exist, to be led by qualified elders, is so the word can sound forth. Maybe the word has touched your heart today. Maybe you've come here today realizing you need to respond to the invitation. Maybe you need to make things right in a public way. Maybe you need our prayers for help and strength. Maybe you're ready to become a Christian today. Whatever your spiritual need is, that's what we're here for, to help you. Whatever that need is, would you let it be made known by coming forward as we stand and sing this invitation song?